class is March 4th, 2009 at the Loft, and we're doing chapter 11. Okay. So in chapter 10, Arjuna wanted to hear about Krishna's glories, and now he wants to see them. Right? Because Krishna ended in chapter 10 saying, just a single fragment of myself, I pervade everything. And Arjuna wants to see, how does that fragment pervade everything? So some of the main things here is that there's qualifications to see Krishna, whether you're seeing a universal form or his original form. And one thing that Prabhupada repeats several times is that many people think that the universal form is the original form. Many people think just Krishna's all-pervading Brahman is the original, and somehow the personal manifested from that, or the universal form is original. But Prabhupada keeps making the point that Krishna's two-arm form is original, from that is the four-arm form, and from that is the universal form, which is not even eternal. It's just displayed when the universe is displayed, and in fact, because the universe is always changing, the universal form is also always changing. We should note that there's just looking briefly at the structure of the chapter. So Arjuna is asking to see the universal form. Krishna says you need different eyes. This is a step down for Arjuna, not a step up, because Arjuna is already seeing Krishna. So he gets the eyes of the demigods to see Krishna. And then he sees Krishna as all space and in one place and all time in one time at one time. So all places are in one place, and past, present, and future are all occurring at the same moment. And that goes on until text 19. And then at text 20, we shift, and Krishna is now, instead of just showing this sort of benign opulence, he shows himself as the destructive force of time. And he's specifically showing Arjuna what Arjuna's interested in, and that is the results of the battle. And then Krishna reveals in this form of time that everything has already been arranged on this battle. Arjuna can just be an instrument. And Arjuna's secondary rasa changes also from wonder at the great form to fear at the form of time. And we have Arjuna's very wonderful prayers to the universal form, which is when Prabhupada mentions that we can pray to Krishna in the prayers of the great acharyas, he often gives these prayers as an example. That one can say these prayers of Arjuna. Then Krishna ends the chapter by saying that this universal form cannot be seen just by study of the Vedas or by austerity or by charity, that one needs to have bhakti. Then Arjuna asks to see the four-arm form, and Krishna shows briefly the four-arm form and then his two-arm form, and then again he repeats, this form also cannot be seen through charity, through study of the Vedas, through austerity. It says only by bhakti. And then the last verse of this chapter, Prabhupada says, is the most essential verse of the Bhagavad Gita, which is interesting because he doesn't quote the verse very often in his lectures or other purports, hardly at all. But that one should simply serve Krishna and work for him and make him the ultimate goal of life. Okay, so text one, Arjuna says that his illusion has been dispelled. So you might say, okay, well then the Bhagavad Gita is done. Is it the 18th chapter, Krishna asks Arjuna, is your illusion now dispelled? But Arjuna said, here, my illusion is now dispelled. So why are we going on? He wants to have some evidence for people in general. Anybody can say something. I'm just thinking about, there was one woman who came to the Krishna Consciousness Movement a long time ago. She told everyone that she was the daughter of a very, very wealthy person and that she was going to be giving, you know, millions or billions of dollars to spreading the movement. And she seduced one sannyasi GBC. He ended up marrying her. Anyway, she didn't have anything. She wasn't anything that she said she was on any level. She said all kinds of things. Anyway, she ended up not to be anything. When it came time to display her opulences, she had no opulences to display. And I recently ran into this situation also somewhere in the world where one gentleman was regularly coming to the temple and promised millions of dollars to a project. And it looked like he had some opulences. He had a very nice house, a very, very, very nice house, plus a second pretty nice house and a couple of very nice cars, and he dressed in nice suits. And he made a number of promises. He made a promise to me, even, that he was going to give a lot of money to one of my projects. And many of us, on the basis of those promises, were working hard for some time. But then when it came time to deliver, he couldn't deliver anything. Okay, now we actually have to pay the construction workers. Now we have to pay this. And then he said, I'm sorry, I don't have anything. Which wasn't very pretty. And the temple had to do a big fundraising project to come up with the money because so many promises had already been made, even to the government. The point is that anybody can talk about opulences, right? Oh, yes, I have so much this, I have so much that. Krishna's been talking. Aham sarvasya prabhavam matta paratram nanyat. I am the source of everything, right? We were reading last chapter. I'm the origin of all the sages and the demigods. And then, okay, show me. So in America, the people who live in the state of Missouri call themselves the show me state, that they don't believe anything easily. They want to be shown. So that's valid. That's valid. One should not believe something just blindly or just sentimentally. Right? There should be some evidence. So Arjuna is now asking for evidence. And he wants this evidence so that people, because so many people are saying, I'm God, I'm an incarnation. What kind of evidence do they give? They produce a little bit of ashes. Something like that. They do some simple magic tricks. I don't know if any of you have ever seen some magicians, but there are some magicians that do some pretty amazing things. You know, there's some lady in a cage, they put a cloth over it, pick it up 2 seconds later, and there's a tiger, and the cage is hanging from the air. How do they do that? Right? Or they're over here, and all of a sudden they're several yards away. Have you seen magicians do this kind of thing? We've all seen magicians cut a lady in half, and they open up the box, and she's still together. That doesn't make them God, just because they can fool us. Maybe some of those magicians actually have mystic power, but most of them don't. Most of them is just some trick of where they're putting the boxes or the lights or wires or something like that. So someone comes along with some trick or some mystic power, and people worship them as God. So Krishna is going to show something beyond. Of course, when Krishna does show this universal form, another universal form, partial universal form to Duryodhana and Karna, they think, oh, he's just a magician. So the freedom to think that is still there. In text 2, Arjuna calls Krishna lotus-eyed one, and Prabhupada said that he's speaking out of his great joy. And the pure devotee is always in ecstatic joy. He's so happy to think about Krishna's beauty. And he's going on and saying that he wants to see this cosmic form. And so Krishna says, okay, you know, here you can see. It's nice that Krishna didn't say, well, I'll show you later. Some of these so-called incarnations, they say, well, yes, yes, I'll show you later privately. Krishna says, no, immediately I will show you. He says, here is this, here is that, here is that. And then he says, but you can't see me. Now, it's interesting because Arjuna is seeing Krishna driving his chariot. Why can't he see Krishna? But he sees Krishna as his friend. So he's given divine eyes, divyam. Divya relates to the devas, to the demigods. So Arjuna's vision is being downgraded. He's now seeing Krishna the way the demigods see Krishna rather than the way one of Krishna's eternal associates see.
Why didn't he need bhakti to be able to see this form?
Well, even the demigods have to have bhakti to be able to see it. Demigods are not without bhakti. Well, Krishna can show his form to whoever he likes. The point is that it's by revelation, but that's a very good question. That you can't force Krishna. I mean, even with us, to some extent, you know, we can't be forced to reveal our nature to somebody. You know, to some extent we can be, but not entirely. We have to decide we're going to show something. So Krishna has to decide. And usually he decides out of love. although he can also decide to show somebody. Yeah. Krishna does show himself to the demons. Of course, when Krishna shows himself to the demons, and I can bring this up now, although this is really throughout the chapter, they don't really see him as he is. I mean, this is even true in our relationship with other jivas. When I was studying about counseling, there was one example given, a true example, of a man who went to therapist saying that his wife didn't love him anymore. And he, you know, they were giving so many examples. They said, well, what evidence do you have that your wife doesn't love you? So he's giving all these examples. So the therapist said, is it all right if we come to your home and just stay there and see the interchange between you and your wife? So he said, sure. So they came, and they'd see the woman was doing so many things that they interpreted as loving. And they would say to the man, well, your wife just did this. Oh, she just does that because she wants to do that. Well, your wife just did this. Oh, she just did this because, right? And a lot of the things he didn't even see. So many of the things she was doing that the therapist thought, what a loving thing to do, he didn't even perceive it. And the things he did perceive, he interpreted them differently. He interpreted, she's doing this because she wants to get a new car or whatever. He was changing. Have you ever had people who did that with you? Mm-hmm. I've had people who've done that with me. You know, I've done things for them, and they say, oh, you just did that for yourself. You know, you did that because you wanted to get something. And so that's also a fact, that the demons perceive, although they may see Krishna, in one sense everybody is seeing Krishna, we're all seeing Krishna. Although they're perceiving Krishna, they're interpreting him according to their own understanding. Therefore, there's a story with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu where he was giving benedictions to everybody. And the devotee said, what about Mukunda? You haven't given any benedictions to Mukunda. And Lord Chaitanya said, I don't want to see Mukunda because he says he's my devotee and then he associates with the impersonalists. So I don't want anything to do with him. And so they told Mukunda that. He was staying outside the room. And Mukunda asked, when will I be able to see the Lord? And Lord Chaitanya sent the message back. I can't remember if it was 10,000 or 10 million births. You'll be able to see me. So then Mukunda started dancing. Mm-hmm. After 10 million births, I'll finally be able to see Lord Chaitanya. And they brought the news back to Lord Chaitanya. He said, okay, bring it in. But when Mukunda came in, there's this very interesting discussion. This is in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Mukunda says that the benediction is not to see the Lord, the benediction is to serve the Lord. And he lists many demons who saw Krishna in various incarnations. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agrees with him, and I like where Lord Chaitanya gives the example of the washerman. And those of you familiar with the story, you know, Krishna goes to Mathura on Kamsa's invitation to kill Kamsa, and one of the first people he meets on the street is a washer and dyer of cloth, and he had beautiful cloth there. He was, you know, even now in India, not very many people have washing machines. You have a servant who washes your clothes. So the king Kamsa had a servant who was washing and dyeing his clothes. So he had all this, you imagine he's the king, how beautiful the cloth was. So Krishna asked this washerman for some clothes, and the washerman says, no, this is for the king, and I have experience. Some of the commentators say he had personal, direct experience himself, that somebody who steals the king's cloth is punished and put into prison. So I'm not going to give you any of these. And then Krishna took his hand and cut off the washerman's head. And you might think, well, that's a rather severe, you know, Krishna asks for cloth and he doesn't get any and he kills the guy. You know, it seems like a rather severe reaction. Mm-hmm. Lord Chaitanya explains that that living entity who was the washerman had done austerities for millions of births, wanting to see God. And so finally Krishna said, okay, you can see me. So now Krishna says, okay, here I am. You can see me. Now let's have a relationship. And he said, no. So Krishna was a little disgusted. Wouldn't you be disgusted? Millions of years, somebody wants to see you. Millions of lifetimes, they're asking to see you. And finally, you know, you make an appointment, you see them and say, okay, well, can we have some relationship? No, I don't have any relationship with you. Get out of here. So Krishna sometimes reveals himself to the demons. I mean, we found when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, he was walking around and people were seeing him, but they weren't necessarily seeing him. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So to see him with love and appreciation and service, that takes a loving attitude, but that's a very good question. Okay. And Krishna is saying that this form has never been seen before. He says this a number of times in the chapter. And you may say, well, wait a minute, Duryodhan and Karna saw universal form, Mother Yasoda saw universal form. But each universal form that Krishna shows is different. First of all, because he's showing people what they want to see, like particularly for Arjuna, and also because the universe is always changing. It's a temporary changing form, not like Krishna's universal unchanging forms. And Krishna gives us hint in text 7, whatever you want to see in the future. So Arjuna was very concerned about the outcome of the battle. You know, if Krishna showed each of us a universal form, he showed us what we want to see. Each of us have some anxiety about something in the future, don't we? Mm-hmm. Don't each of us, don't you each have some anxiety about something in the future that you want to know how it's going to turn out? Right? Like I'm working on this project and I want to know, is it going to happen? I met one artist in San Diego who told me she illustrated a book for Govardhan, about Govardhan Puja, and it's never been published. Mm-hmm. And that sort of haunted me. Mm-hmm. I'm working on these books. Will they just sit on a computer somewhere and never be published? Will they be published? And if they're published, will they be sold? Will people use them? You know, what's going to happen? So we all have some anxiety, right? Are you going to get married? You know, is it going to be happy? Is this going to happen? And that kind of happens, right? Mm-hmm. You know, or someone's going to move, like Baba Sandi just moved. Is that going to work out? How's it going to go? Is this going to happen? Or, you know, you're also about to get married. You're going to open a restaurant. Is it going to? So you have some anxiety. So Arjuna also had some anxiety. How's this battle going to work out? So Krishna specifically to show him, yes, what's going to happen. All right. In this purport of divine eyes, Prabhupada really goes at length to discuss how the devotees are not interested in seeing this form, this universal form, that this is not the sort of relationship that they want to have with Krishna. Therefore, Arjuna needed special eyes because he wasn't personally inclined to see Krishna. It wasn't a point of view that he wanted to have for himself. It wasn't his own mood. You might not want to see your husband or your son or your father, who's a policeman or a soldier, killing somebody. It might not be very pleasing. So therefore Arjuna knew that this was required. Otherwise, how could you really establish that Krishna was who he said he was? So therefore, Krishna had to give him these special eyes. And Prabhupada speaks a lot in this purport about how the devotees are not, this is not dear to the devotees. Okay. Then we have this description, unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes. Prabhupada often, in speaking about these verses, says that even in the universal form, Krishna is a person. He has form, he has arms, he has eyes, he has a mouth, he has bellies, he has legs. It's not just some vague light and sound and energy without any form. And of course Krishna has that too. And text 12, this is the verse when they were working on the atomic bomb in the United States during World War II that Robert Oppenheimer quoted when they detonated the first atomic bomb. He said, just like many thousands of suns were to appear into the sky. So here is often the scripture, there's descriptions of Krishna compared to something that we can imagine. In Madhurya Kanamani, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says how when the devotee sees Krishna, he apologizes for comparing Krishna to ordinary things. You know, how can I compare you to a lotus flower or to the moon or to sapphires or... But something for our understanding. So Sanjaya is talking to Dhritarashtra. Sanjaya can see the universal form, Dhritarashtra cannot. And he's saying that it's bright as if thousands of suns. Okay, so here we have this description of all places. In one place, there's all the different places of the universe. and now his rasa changes to that of astonishment. So Arjuna is normally in a mood of friendship with Krishna, but now he takes on one of the secondary rasas. There's five primary rasas. Now, just a little side thing. Although we generally talk about the relationship with Krishna using the word rasa, that is not technically correct. Rasa really encompasses five things. And one of them is the nature of the relationship, whether you're relating with Krishna as your, as just in awe and reverence, as your master, as your friend, as your child, or as your lover. So that's, that particular relationship is one of five aspects of rasa. It's actually what's called the sthaibhav, but we don't generally use the word sthaibhav, although certainly Prabhupada uses it, and it's throughout the shastra. We usually just use the word rasa to mean one of those relationships. So, rasa involves other things as well. Anyway, Arjuna's rasa with Krishna is that of a friend. He feels that Krishna is basically his equal. He doesn't really think about Krishna's opulence or think about Krishna as God. He just thinks of Krishna as his friend. And the seven secondary rasas sometimes mix with the five primary rasas. And when they overwhelm the devotee is said to be in that rasa. So Arjuna is now overwhelmed with wonder. We should note the difference between Arjuna and Mother Yasoda. That Arjuna, when he gets overwhelmed with wonder, he forgets his friendship with Krishna. In fact, he apologizes for it later on in the chapter. Whereas that does not happen to Yasoda. Yasoda, even though she's also filled with wonder, seeing Krishna's universal form in his mouth, she never loses the feeling that she's Krishna's mother. So this is the difference between the devotees in Vrindavan and the devotees everywhere else. That the devotees in Vrindavan may sometimes think about or perceive or experience Krishna's opulence as a supreme lord. And they may even acknowledge, yes, Krishna's a supreme lord. There's a number of places in Bhagavatam where the residents of Vrindavan say Krishna's a supreme lord. But their feeling towards him is always that of intimacy. They never lose that feeling. I'm just thinking when my daughter had what's called her Arangetram, which is your graduation from Bharatanatyam. That's when you move from being a student to being qualified to be a teacher. And you perform 4 to 6 hours of solo dancing and all the different styles of Bharatanatyam. So I remember when I was watching her, I was so happy and overwhelmed with her talent and her devotion, but I still felt like her mother. And if she ever were to become, I mean, she has no such aspiration, but if she ever were to become some big star and had her name in lights and there were posters of her up everywhere, I probably would still just feel, oh, wow, I have a really great daughter. So that's the way the residents of Vrindavan feel, whereas Arjuna becomes completely overwhelmed by this wonder, and his friendship doesn't stop. But it's, how should you say? It sort of gets pushed to the side. And so now he sees all of the demigods, everyone who is within Krishna's body. This is what Krishna talked about, right? Krishna told him in the 10th chapter that I'm the origin of everybody. Now Arjuna is practically seeing it.
Can I ask just one?
Yes, of course.
On this point that, Arjuna lost the friendship.
Yes.
Could we say that it was intentional because Krishna wanted him to perform a particular duty, fighting? You know what I'm trying to say?
I don't know if it's explained like that. Mm-hmm. The explanation given is simply that Arjuna is in a different... In general.
Kind of need.
Well, the devotees are always exhibiting their moods and their behavior in ways that please Krishna and help him in his mission. That's always the case. Although, sometimes the desires of the devotees, how they want to please Krishna, is different than what Krishna had in mind originally. And the devotees always win in such cases. Just like Krishna did not want the cowherd boys to go into Agasura's mouth. Or Krishna did not want Rukmini to faint. That sometimes happens. Certainly. Of course, yes. This is what Krishna wants. But as far as why Arjuna is overwhelmed by wonder, that's because he's in that particular mood. All right. And here Arjuna is describing Krishna as all time, all space, as the maintainer, as encompassing all living entities. And now in text 20, you see that he's starting, we have a shift from 19 and 20, that he's burning the universe and that everyone is disturbed. So here Arjuna's mood changed from wonder to fear. And here Krishna has shifted his universal form to show it, instead of just being everywhere and everything and everyone within him. He's also said in the ninth chapter, Maya Tathamidam Sarvam, my form is everywhere, everything is within me. So just showing that in a general, wondrous, grand way, now he's showing it in a terrible way. And we should note that although Prabhupada says in one of the purports that the other people on the battlefield couldn't see this form, Sanjaya is seeing the form, and the demigods and demons and siddhas, and as Prabhupada says in one of these purports, the intelligentsia of the universe, they've all come to see the battle of Kurukshetra because Krishna's there, and they can see this form. So there now that Krishna has shifted to this form of destruction, the demigods are becoming afraid. It's interesting also the difference between the demigods and the celestial rishis. The demigods are saying, protect us, and the rishis are saying, let there be peace in the universe. So a little different mood there. And now Arjuna is listing some of the beings who can see this universal form. And again, he's describing it in a very personal way. There's teeth, there's arms, there's bellies, there's faces. And he's really noticing the terrible teeth. And this fire that is mentioned in text 25 blazed like, what's it, Kalanala? Where is Kalanala mentioned? I have that down as 25, but I don't think it's in 25. Anyway, I have it written down as... Oh, here it is, yes. Eva Kana Alala, the fire of death. Kalanala. So this is the same fire that destroys the whole universe at the time of destruction. The fire that comes out of the mouth of Anantasesha. So Arjuna is seeing the same fire of total universal destruction. All right, now he's saying that, again, he's talking about the teeth over and over again, right? In 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, Arjuna's talking about the teeth. And he's saying that the sons of Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Drona, and Karna, now these were the people that Arjuna was really worried about. We may have a number of people in our life that we think of as enemies and we worry about, but some of them we might really worry about. So these are the ones Arjuna is really concerned about. He didn't think there was any way he was going to defeat Bhishma. And Drona was his own teacher. And Karna, well, Karna was often described as being equal to or almost equal to Arjuna. Also, Karna had received a special Shakti weapon from Indra, who is Arjuna's, as we say nowadays, biological father, mm-hmm. and specifically that he was going to use against Arjuna. So Arjuna had some concern, and he saw them specifically trapped with heads smashed between your teeth. And then we see that there's two analogies here, waves of river going into the ocean and moss going into a fire. So rivers naturally flow into an ocean, and moss very consciously go into the fire. So the moss here particularly are compared to the demons who intentionally go to fight with Krishna and rush to their own death. And again, going into his mouth, Prabhupada mentions sometimes that Krishna can eat anything. In fact, Krishna does eat everything. And there's a verse, I forget where it is, that says that Krishna ultimately eats everything, even the brahmanas, at the end of the creation. Mm-hmm. He said at the same time, he's asking patram pushpam palam toyan. He's asking for vegetarian food. Mm-hmm. Even though here in the universal form, Krishna's eating people. He eats everything. At the end of the universe, everything is destroyed and everything is devoured by the Supreme. Yet, in his form of Krishna, he's not interested in eating flesh and blood. He's interested in vegetarian. Interesting, huh? But we see everything is in the belly of the Lord. Even we're right now in the belly of the Lord. Terrible scorching rays. Again, flaming mouths. Fire is coming out of his mouth. Pretty scary, huh? Forms everywhere with fire like the end of the universe and fire coming out of his mouth and all these people rushing into his mouth and being chomped up by his huge, terrible teeth. Fierce of form. So now Arjuna say, who are you? What is your mission? You know, what are you doing? These moths running into the fire. You know, these were big, invincible people, Bhishma, Drona, Karna. So it doesn't matter how big you are and how important you are, you're going to become devoured by time. And then Krishna says, time I am. Now, time is very interesting. Prabhupada comments in a number of places that when Krishna says, I am time, he's talking about his manifestation of Lord Shiva. That Shiva is time, the destroyer. Now, time is certainly interesting. We talked about time a little bit last week, I think, or the week before, in relationship with the 10th chapter, and I advised you, and I'm going to advise you again, to find the article in Bhakti Godhead by Mathuresh on time. Time is fascinating because it doesn't exist in the spiritual world. There's no time. There's only present. And even our perception of time on this planet is very different from the perception of time on other planets. Or very different even from the perception of time by other beings on this planet, by other kinds of life forms on this planet. So these plants don't experience time the way that we do, or a little bug doesn't experience time the way that we do. In other words, time is not really something objective. Time is really just talking about the movement of one thing in relationship to another thing. Or time is talking about the rate at which something is destroyed. So there's no destruction in the spiritual world. So this time doesn't exist when the material world is unmanifested. It comes into being and then it goes away. So we could say that time is really illusory. At the same time, time is Krishna himself. So it's real, but it's not real. It's one of those things about the material nature, where material nature is both false and real at the same time. I was just reading this in Krishna book. And Prabhupada said, seeing things separately from Krishna is false.